Jesse? Ah, the mysterious, complicated millennials. This is going to be interesting. Man, so we're just going to dive right in. But first, let me tell you a little bit about myself, who I am. My name is Nick Briggs, obviously, and I talk extremely fast, and I apologize in advance. It is a known issue. I gave a sample of this message Wednesday to a few friends, people in the church, and they gave feedback, all of them. Hey, what's the feedback? Slow down simultaneously. So I know I talk fast. I apologize, especially when it's something that I'm passionate about or very exciting. I'm talking about Jesus. So that's exciting to me, and as I get going, sometimes it goes really quick, and I'm sorry, the message is online. If you have a cool player, you can hit slow down and like listen to it at half speed. That's an option. Other than that, I will do my best, I promise you. So a little backstory about me. I was born and raised right here in Manteca. Not technically, I wasn't born in Manteca. I was born in Tracy because my parents, who are boomers, they tell me Manteca didn't have a hospital at the time or didn't have a birthing hospital, whatever that means. So they had me in Tracy, but I was raised right here in Manteca pretty much my whole life. Went through kindergarten through eighth grade right there at Neil Halfley. Went to East Union for 4 years and have spent the last 15 years or so in and out of Delta College because that takes a long time when you don't do it all at once. Spent about 4 years in Arizona doing youth ministry. Went to Arizona Christian University out there for a little bit, had a good time. I didn't realize this till recently, though. Pretty much all of my youth ministry experience, which is from around the year 2000 to about now, which is about 18 years, pretty much all of that is to millennials. I never really realized that. I never paid that much attention to the age groups. You see, the term millennial means those who are coming to age in the new millennia. I didn't know that. I thought millennials meant something to the effect of those who were born after the year 2000. Not at all. Instead, it's those that are coming of age in the new millennia, those that are coming of age after the year 2000, which has been pretty much my entire tenure in youth ministry, which is kind of crazy. So now I understand a little more why Miles chose me to give this sermon. I didn't always consider myself a millennial. You see, millennials have a very bad reputation, if you didn't already know that. So I try to find different ways to look at the stats here, because some stats you look at say that millennials are born between 81 and 96. That's mostly what I'll be using for today. That's Pew Research. Pew Research does really good stuff. They're unbiased. They have large sample sizes. They get peer reviews. So all the data from Pew Research is pretty good, in my opinion. And they label millennials from 81 to 96. That's kind of what I'm going to be sticking to today. But I've seen some other statistics. Some say that millennials are more like 83 to 2000. Now, in the past, when I saw them, cool, let's look at that one because that means I'm not a millennial because I was born in 81. So if you look at that stat, I'm Gen X. I don't have to be a millennial. Awesome. Or I found an even better one. This other group figured out that, hey, there's this group of people born between like 80 and 83 that don't really identify with millennials or Gen X, but somewhere in between. You see, they grew up in the information age. Like, the internet was invented when I was like in middle school, somewhere in there. Or not invented, but became very popular in that time. So I started with AOL and all that. Like, I had this little floppy disk, AOL free trial. I had that. And that's where I got on the internet for the first time. But I remember corded phones. I remember not having cable for some time. It was just over-the-air antenna was a thing. So I have this like analog, like young childhood, and this very digital older childhood. And so for me, they labeled these people the Zennials. That's a fun term. They took Generation X, the X from that, and put it in place of the M for millennials, and you get Zennial. So I'm like, sweet, I'm a Zennial. I don't have to claim I'm a millennial. Why would I want to do that? I'll just call myself a Zennial. Then I started studying millennials more and more, and they have a lot of very defining characteristics. One of the major characteristics of a millennial is not wanting the label of millennial. I fit into that all too well, don't I? Trying desperately. No, I'm Gen X. No, I'm a Zennial. No, the very reason you're trying to get out of this is because you are indeed a millennial. So I stand before you here today. Confession, I am a millennial. Please don't throw lettuce at me. So why would I not want to be called a millennial? I have a clicker. Let's use that. I'm not good with slides, I'll warn you right now. Miles does slides so well. I'm going to try it, but I never do slides. So if I start talking, there's nothing on the screen that's relevant to what I'm talking about. Just point or something. I'll figure it out. Here we go. Why would I not want to be called a millennial? Because this really clever young millennial went ahead and took all the newspaper clippings about things millennials are killing, and she made herself this little kind of artwork piece here. It was really neat. All the different stuff that newspapers are saying that millennials are killing. It cracks me up. I'll read some for you if you can't read them from there. Did millennials kill fashion? How millennials almost killed the wine cork? Did millennials kill the hangout sitcom? How millennials killed J.Crew? I don't even know what J.Crew is. Have millennials killed hotel loyalty programs? My personal favorite, millennials killed brunch. How dare we kill brunch? This is comical at best, but it was actually kind of interesting. When I came across this, it led me down a rabbit hole on the internet, which I often follow more than I should, but starts talking about this whole idea of millennials killed has become a very, very common headline we see in newspapers especially because of who their readership is, but also as clickbait, online, videos, and everything else. It is very common to see that millennials killed something. It's even a meme now, and the meme is usually called Millennials Killed Mayonnaise. I have no idea how I killed mayonnaise, I'm sorry. But there's a whole like thing about what millennials have killed. And they found the reason to that is most boomers and traditionalists, so generations prior, they like seeing that millennials killed things. They like seeing that younger generation is doing something that we don't like. That is clickbait worthy. That's something that they want to see and get angry about. Miles did a whole really excellent series on curating the message in different media sources. And the main thing we find about media sources being biased isn't just their political bias, it's their viewership bias. They're trying to say things that get under your skin. They're trying to say things either you want to hear or they're saying things that they know you want to get upset about. They know, oh, that makes me angry. I'm going to click on that. I'm going to read that. That's what they're doing here. So as frustrating as millennials may be, I would argue that a large portion of the media is pitting us against one another. It's very easy to show that, hey, millennials are doing all these bad things. Look at all the stuff that they're killing, and it gains viewership. It gains readership. I would even argue that millennials being frustrating to former generations is nothing new. I'm sure traditionalists could look at boomers and say there were things they were doing that were making them frustrated. There was the whole hippie generation. There's all sorts of stuff that kids do that drives their parents nuts. Parents usually are somewhat disconnected from their kids' culture. That's not new, people. That's been going on since, as far as I can tell, the beginning of time. So for millennials to seem odd and weird and different isn't odd and weird and different. That's simply the next generation being different from their parents, which is kind of common. So some quick facts about us millennials. I had to say us. Millennials born from 81 to 96, we are the largest generation in the labor force since 2016 and climbing. This was interesting to me because a lot of stereotypes about millennials is they're super lazy, don't want to work, live at home with their parents. Some of that's all true. However, there are enough of them to make up the largest single block in the labor force. More than one-third of the workforce is made up of millennials. And we are projected to overtake baby boomers as the largest generation in the nation. So some of that was very counter to what people currently believe about millennials. We believe that they're just lazy and whatnot, but it shows they are working. Millennials don't hold as many 9-to-5 jobs as in the past, but they're working either different kinds of jobs like Uber or social programs like that, or they're working as self-employed or on commission. So they are working, just not in the most traditional fashion. But the biggest one is that they are projected to overtake baby boomers as the largest generations. It's going to be the biggest generation in the U.S. very, very soon. And like it or not, this means that millennials are the future. Kind of a scary statement to say, but millennials are indeed the future. I don't have this one up there, but millennial women accounted for 82% of U.S. births in 2016. That one really struck me. 82% of the babies born in 2016 were born to millennial mothers. That's crazy. That's the vast majority. And that was climbing, so by now I'm sure it's closer to 90. That means most of the kids coming out right now are kids to millennials. We often think of millennials as kids themselves, as children that can't seem to get their lives together or whatever. But in reality, we're seeing that millennials are becoming parents. We've had this stereotype of what millennials are for like 10 years now. And that kind of changes over the course of 10 years because now they're old enough to start marrying and having kids. Here's my favorite part. These are some of the priorities millennials have. Millennial priorities. The first one, surprised me, being a good parent. We have these perceptions of millennials as being just kind of, I don't know, I think of almost like these like random surfer beach bums that don't care about anything and just sleep until noon and surf all day. I don't know why, that's kind of what the media projects as millennials to me. So to see that one of the things they care most about is being a good parent surprised me. Some of these might surprise you. Please check me on this. Go to Pew Research and look up some of these details because some of these are like, that can't be right. But they show their research. I found this to be very interesting for millennials to be good parents. And then I had to remember, wait a minute, I am a millennial. Being a good parent is, of course, extremely important to me. I guess that kind of adds up. The second most important thing to millennials, having a successful marriage. That one also surprised me. We're seeing that millennials are getting married and having kids later and later in life, but it doesn't mean that they're not. When we hear later and later in life, we tend to assume that means like, oh, they're postponing, it's never gonna happen. No, millennials are like, I'm 36 and I'm a millennial and I'm married and have kids, and that's not rare for millennials anymore. We find that a lot of millennials grew up in single-family homes. The baby boomer divorce rate was very, very high. Miles talked about that. And that led to millennials being raised in homes with usually one parent. For that reason, a lot of millennials, like a lot of people, have this idea of, I want my kids to have what I never did. And so for these millennials, they want to have a successful, healthy marriage and to be very good parents. Because for some of them, they didn't really get to see a healthy marriage modeled for them very well. So it's extremely important for them to model that to their children. I found that to be very interesting. Number three, helping others in need. I forgot the S on that. Helping other in need. Close enough. Yeah, millennials want to be philanthropists. We have this idea of millennials being narcissists, just caring about themselves a whole lot. Yeah, some of that's true, but they do have this desire to help people. And if you look at some of the social programs they're involved in, that actually makes a lot of sense. They're involved in all sorts of things that just care for other people well. They want to be connected, and they want people to feel like they're loved. This one was really strange. Owning a home is a big priority for millennials. Again, that kind of goes against what intuition says about millennials. We think of them as living at home forever. But one of the things they killed, millennials killed the starter home. That one perplexed me a bit, so I researched that one. Millennials killed the starter home because millennials are indeed living at home longer, but when they do move out, they tend to move out with somebody that they usually get married to and have kids. So they're kind of moving into the family home out of their home. They're skipping the apartment and like single life. House phase of their life altogether. The reason for that isn't just simply because they're lazy. The reason for that is because largely the economy. They can't find jobs. Like right now, try to find a job that would allow you to make enough money as a young person, like in your 20s, to buy a home in Manteca. It's dang near impossible. And that's true for a lot of the nation, where it's really hard to buy yourself, get enough money to have a job where you make enough money to buy a home all by yourself. Most homes require two incomes. And because millennials are waiting longer to get married, it takes a while for them to have two incomes and buy a home. But when they do, they actually want to own a home. That is a priority for them. And this one surprised me by far the most. Living a very religious life. That one, I had to check the research on that. Like, okay, pure research, you're making that up. Check their research, and this is what a lot of millennials say, at least is their fifth highest priority in life, is living a very religious life. Now, most people will think that millennials are a-religious or anti-religion. And there's some truth to that. There's some very interesting statistics about that. Millennials are walking away from the church in droves. It's happening. So how does this pair with that other information? This was very confusing to me and required some more research. I also found out that more than any other generation, millennials see Christmas as more of a cultural holiday than a religious one. Yet, they're the most likely generation to celebrate it. That's weird. Millennials think that Christmas is more cultural than religious, yet they celebrate it more than any other generation. Some of these statistics just weren't making sense to me. They just weren't really fitting in my brain right. And then I came across this. Out of the last five generations, millennials are the least likely to attend church or claim a particular faith. However, millennials pray just as often as the last generation, and just as many believe in God. Then it started to all kind of make sense. Millennials want to be religious. They have this desire to live a very religious life. They do believe in God. They simply don't want anything to do with the church. I kind of hurt, because I like the church. The church is a big part of my life. But to see that my people, I'm going to call them that, my people, the millennials, they don't want anything to do with the church. They want to have something to do with God, but not with the church. And it all kind of made sense. Everything that I read and listened to YouTube videos and TED Talks about millennials had this in common. It is that millennials completely distrust organization, authority, and establishment. And the church is establishment. That's where a lot of it lines up. They want God, just not the established church. That actually makes sense now that you think about it. If they want to live a religious life and they believe in God, but they don't want to go to church. Millennials grew up in a time when establishments were kind of a bad thing. They learned to distrust the government. A lot of them distrust the police. They distrust large corporations. To them, large corporations are doing some pretty bad stuff. For boomers growing up, these large corporations were kind of advancing prosperity and whatnot. Millennials saw the other side of that. They lived through the Great Recession. They see these big corporations and big banks and all this kind of stuff as the bad guys. So when they start to see these big structures and institutions as bad guys, that includes the church. They saw the Catholic Church do some pretty ugly stuff. And for some of them that don't know the church well, they don't know how much of that bleeds into Christianity and Protestant churches as well. They just see the institution as church as abusing power. So they want nothing to do with it. It's not their faith in God that's shrinking, it's their trust in organized religion. That made a lot of sense to me. Spending most of my time in youth ministry dealing with millennials, I saw a lot of this. I saw a lot of students respond more to home groups than a youth group program. Most of my youth group programs have been in churches, Like, there'd be a room somewhere in the church, it's like the youth room, and we make it look cool and fun. We put, you know, goofy stuff in there. And some kids just don't want anything to do with it. They just simply don't want to go to the church. And their friends invite them. Like, that's in the church? Nah, I don't think I want to go there. But then we hold a home group of some sort for the students. And more students show up to the home group than they do to the youth group. When we do more fun stuff, like the more of the traditional fun things that should attract students at the youth group, we play crazy games, we give them food, we do messy games, we eat the food and smear it all over your face, we do all sorts of weird stuff that kids should like. But they would rather go sit and do a Bible study in their friend's home than do all the big, crazy, gross stuff where they can win prizes. It's because they're not real trusting of the church itself. Once we introduce them to the church and they start to get to know people and we're not crazy, well, we're kind of crazy, but in a good way, they're okay with that. Then they come to the church, but at first they are somewhat hostile towards the institution of church, and that makes sense. So I'll spare you all the numbers that go along with that, but millennials don't like to use the same terminology and are dismissive, if not hostile, towards organized religion. So, brings me to this. Where do millennials fit into the church, based on all of that? That is the question I want to answer. First thing to understand is that millennials are the young families in the church. I struggled with that for a bit, because at first, remember, I keep thinking of millennials as like these young kids. And I am a millennial. I have young kids. They just ran out a minute ago. Like, we are the young families in the church. We still have this idea of millennials as being these, like, kids, but millennials are the young families. If I were to ask right now, hey, how many of you are millennials? How many of you have kids? It's pretty close. A good friend of mine is a church planter. His name is Rusty. And he has all these statistics on generations and, like, where to plant churches and what's making churches grow and what's not. Very, very interesting stuff. And he says that one of the best ways to judge the health of a church is to see its kids program and its babies, to go see if there's lots of kids in there. Not just the program itself, but are there lots of kids and, you know, young people in those programs? If there are, that means the church is healthy. I didn't really understand that at first. I asked him more, but why would that be the health of the church? He said, well, that means if you have young kids, that means that you have young families. If you have young families, they often bring their parents. And young families are going to be the ones that are most active in serving and hosting small groups and whatnot. And most importantly, they are simply the future of the church. Like, literally, they're going to get older and keep the church going as the church progresses. So young families, millennials, make up kind of the healthy part of the church to see if it's going to grow or not. That was pretty interesting to me. Further statistics show that churches are right now closing faster than opening across the U.S., which is a very sad statistic. But of the churches that are closing, virtually all of them have very few, if not no, young families. It's the churches that are surviving and doing well that have young families in their congregation. And that usually means young kids birthed by millennials. So we can see the second point. Millennials make healthy churches. That's a weird statement, man. You think about that before, and it's like, man, millennials are just frustrating and hard to grasp and all stuff. But judging by the data, they make up healthy churches. And they are, of course, the most underreached generation in churches as a whole. Most churches aren't really doing a whole lot to reach millennials. And if they are, to be honest, we're failing. We're not reaching millennials well. Millennials are walking away from the church faster than they are walking to the church. It's not extremely dire, looking at the stats. It's about 75% of millennials go to church of some sort, which is more than I thought. It seems like 10%. No, it's 75%. So 1 in 4 of millennials say they don't go to church or don't believe in God or have a faith. That's 25%. That is more than any previous generation, but it's still not abysmal as we thought. So, what do millennials want? What do they value? In a word, purpose. Everything that I watched, all the TED Talks, all that stuff, made it very clear the one thing that millennials are desperate for. I don't have a slide for that one. I just failed. So there's no, millennials want purpose. If you're taking notes, write the word purpose on there real big. And I can absolutely relate to this. More than anything else, we desire purpose. I remember before I became a believer in 1996, my freshman year of high school at Calvary Community Church, just over there. I was desperate for purpose in my life, which is not real surprising. If you look at how millennials are treated in the entertainment they have, it's no wonder they lack purpose. For millennials, they can go on YouTube or pick up a PS4 and have just inundated with all the different forms of entertainment they might want. Anything they want, they can be entertained by. Millennials are the most entertained generation yet. I think Gen Z's taken over pretty quick here. My kids just stare at YouTube and it drives me nuts. Millennials started that, where there's just so much entertainment, they don't really ever are given any kind of a purpose. They're just given entertainment. So as millennials matured in the new millennium, the 2000 plus, They lack that greatly. This came to fruition for me in Arizona, a student of mine who I never really had a great relationship with prior. I saw him on a Sunday morning and said, "Hey man, how are you?" And he's kind of an odd kid. He's kind of goes, just grumbles at me. What the heck was that? So ask him again, "Hey man, how are you?" He's fine. Just angsty teenager maybe, or maybe something's going on, not really sure. "Hey, come here, talk to me. What's going on?" And just all of a sudden starts crying. This is like a pretty, this is like a senior in high school, I think. This isn't just like a smaller kid who's having a hard time. This is an adult, or not adult, almost adult, pre-adult, male, pretty strong kid, and just starts crying and says, "Nothing I do matters. What are you doing for lunch? Let's hang out." "Okay." Take him to lunch, just start talking. And he epitomizes everything I've been saying about purpose. He is just, he has tons of entertainment. He has all sorts of toys and computer programs and games and sports. And at school, he can play all the sports he wants. He can do whatever he wants. But none of the things that he's allowed to do, that he wants to do, really makes a difference or matters. And if you've been following along, all the things that matter to millennials are being a good parent and having a healthy marriage and helping other people. Those are things that are purposeful. This student was lacking purpose because our society had frankly robbed him of it. And he felt that. One thing I love about millennials, there aren't many, but one thing I love about millennials is we all lack purpose. Millennials are simply more upfront about it. We all lack purpose. The only purpose we're going to get is from Jesus. We all have this thing called spiritual hunger. So my youth pastor, the guy that led me to Christ over there at Calvary, yes, millennials suffer, just like everyone else, from spiritual hunger. He puts it like this, really neat guy named Dave Maloof, crazy curly-haired man that ran around the stage and yelled a lot. It's where I get some of my fast talking from. You can blame him. But he talked a lot about spiritual hunger. He put it like this. He said, everybody's born with this hole in their soul caused by sin. But that hole in their soul, we're always going to be finding our entire life some way to fulfill that, to make it to feel whole, W-H-O-L-E, not H-O-L-E, to feel whole, to fulfill that hole in our soul. That rhymes. We all have that. We're all looking for some way to fill that, and we find all sorts of bad ways to do so. Some of the ugliest ways we try to do that are through addictions, to be that drugs, alcohol, unhealthy relationships. We find addictive things to try to make us feel whole, and that's kind of like, you ever see that? There's that one kid in the playroom that has the shapes box where you put shapes in it and you hammer them in, put the star in the star hole and hammer it, the square in the square hole. There's the one kid that puts the wrong one in and gets mad because it doesn't fit, so he just hammers it in there, destroying the toy. That's kind of what we do when we find something unhealthy to fulfill ourselves with. It's the wrong shape. It doesn't fit, but we just pound it in there and make it fit. Try to break those, almost. Then we try to find other things that might kind of fit or seem like a good idea to fulfill the spiritual hunger that we have. We find things that are good things, like family, like raising kids, like having a successful career. And we take those things, we place them in this hole in our soul and say, this will make me feel fulfilled. This will give me purpose. And it does to some extent, but not all the way. It doesn't actually make us whole. Only God's going to fill that hole. So even good things like family and children and career aren't really going to leave us feeling satisfied. And lastly, and perhaps the most dangerous one because it seems to fit the best, we like to take a religion and place it right here and say, look, I'm whole now. I have found religion. I go to church. I read my Bible. I might do these things, but I'll tell you right now, people, religion is not going to leave you feeling whole and satisfied. It's not going to repair the sin hole that's in your soul. Only Jesus does that. Only Jesus will give you purpose. Only Jesus will fill that hole in your soul that's going to make you feel whole again. Helping students understand that has been the most difficult and rewarding part of my career in youth ministry. Oh, I actually have a slide for that one. There it is. The only thing that will fill the hole in your soul is Jesus. That's probably, if not, maybe one of the major points I'd like to make today. If you remember nothing else, please remember that right there. So what do millennials need? Millennials need guidance, direction, and purpose. Purpose that only comes from Jesus. What millennials need is the church. Maybe not the institution of the church, but definitely the body of the church. What millennials need is us. Romans 10:14? Yes. Romans 10:14 says, "How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them?" We tend to be upset with millennials for not sharing our values. I would ask, who do you expect to teach them these values? So, how do we reach the millennials? This is the crux of it. I'll give you two ways, and they're both wrong. Number one, conform to their culture. So we're going to look at two different ways churches are trying to reach millennials right now. And they're both failing miserably. One is the ultra-liberal side, one's the ultra-conservative. I'm talking religious here, not political at all. Please just disregard all politics. So the ultra-liberal churches, excuse me, I got something in my throat here. The ultra-liberal churches are trying to conform to millennial culture. If you've been following along for millennial culture, that's a bad idea because it's frankly a bad culture in a lot of ways. But we see some churches kind of changing everything about themselves to reach the millennials. Oh, you want to start super late? Yeah, we can do that. Oh, you want to have pizza for communion? Yeah, we can do that. Oh, you guys want to change what this book says? Yeah, we can do that. That's a huge problem. That's a huge problem for two reasons. The most obvious reason is if you're changing this to meet the need of a specific culture, to be honest, your religion's worthless. That's nonsense. That is not helping anybody. It's frankly damaging. That's the first and most obvious problem. But the second problem is, if you're changing things to meet the needs of the millennials, or not the needs, the desires and whims and culture of the millennials, you're teaching them that the world will mold around them to fit what they want. That's not healthy at all. That's created this entire generation of people lacking purpose. All this entertainment being thrown at them. If we're going to throw a religion tailored specifically to what they want as well at them, great, they'll take that too. Why should they work for anything? It's a terrible idea. The other side's really not that much better. On the conservative side, we see churches that don't want to conform to millennials' culture, but says, conform to ours, then come join us. That's not helping either. That's not helping at all. Frankly, I see more churches doing that. When I went to Arizona Christian University, they had a tagline which I absolutely hated, and it was, transforming culture with truth. Now, it sounds nice. It is a noble purpose, a righteous one, but it's one, as far as I can tell, we were never called to do. And secondly, I've never seen work in the past 2,000 years of history. When's the last time there was a nation that, hey, that's a good Christian nation, and man, they're doing great, and Christianity's spreading and doing fantastic there? It's not really happened. As far as I can tell, historically, every time we try to make a Christian culture, we fail. I make a microculture of a church, that's awesome, but an entire nation, entire culture around us should all be Christian. I'd like that, but it's simply not working. It's not working at all. So the idea that, hey, millennials, conform, look like us, then we'll welcome you in, isn't working at all. It's frankly driving them away even more. There's the second one. Sorry, bad slides. Instead, here's how we ought to reach millennials. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? They're asking Jesus. He replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus was faced with all sorts of questions regarding culture. When Jesus first came on the scene, people didn't think he was there for the right reasons. I remember learning this when I was younger in my faith. This always surprised the heck out of me. I thought that people always looked at Jesus as, oh, he's finally here, the Messiah, to save us from our sins, to give us that purpose, to give us this relationship with God. When Jesus first got there, a lot of people didn't understand that. They thought, oh, great, the Messiah is finally here. This is the Christ, the one who was foretold, the one whom they had prophesied about. He's here to save us from Rome. People thought that Jesus was there to save them from Rome. Rome was the ruling, like, invading culture and nation at the time. Rome overruled Israel completely. They had Roman guards. They had to do all sorts of things that Rome imposed upon them, making it very difficult for them to worship their God and practice their culture. There was literally a culture war going on in Israel at the time that Jesus came. And people missed the greater purpose Christ had for them. They thought Christ was just there to overthrow Rome. And every time he was asked about it, Jesus was, frankly, just dismissive. Who should we pay taxes to? Well, whose picture's on the coin? Oh, Caesar? We'll pay that to Caesar and pay unto God what is God's. Jesus was not interested in transforming culture. Jesus was not interested in people, hey, get your culture right, then come talk to me. No, instead, Jesus said, just love people well. Just love them radically. Love them in ways that their culture will not. That's when I see the church be most successful. When the church is loving to millennials, or any age group really, when it's loving in ways the culture is not, in a bigger, better way, that's when people want to hear more about what the church has to say. Millennials look at truth differently. This is the part I found to be very interesting and actually kind of lined up really well with my time in ministry. Excuse me. Millennials believe in objective truth. Miles talked a lot last week about Gen X not believing in objective truth, but instead looking at relativism, saying that what may be true for you is not necessarily true for me. Millennials don't buy that. Millennials believe that truth is objective. The truth is out there, but, X-Files throwback, they grew up in the information age, much like myself, which means all the information was always available to us. Like, if you want to look something up, no problem. Now, I remember, I'm a Gen X, like millennial half-breed here. I remember before the internet, to look something up, you had to go find an encyclopedia. We had this huge chunk of encyclopedias at my grandma's house. We'd go there and look stuff up in those because it was just neat and fun. And if it wasn't there, you had to go to the library to learn things. That's like foreign nowadays. It's insane. But I remember that. If you want to look something up, you had to go to the library. If I couldn't beat a video game, too bad. Now, if I can't beat a video game, just go online, cheat code, whatever you want. It's easy. But millennials grew up in this information age where they're used to having all the information at their fingertips at all times, which creates a flood of information, and it makes the truth hard to distinguish. This is the key part for millennials. This is why truth is so tricky, because there's so much information out there. Even if the truth is among it, it's hard to find that. Whatever you want to believe, I can find you 10 links on the internet to prove that for you. You want to believe in Bigfoot? No problem. Here are 10 links, articles, videos, photographic evidence of we can see Bigfoot in this picture, and here he is walking, doing his thing. We found Bigfoot footprints. We found Bigfoot poop. My friend had coffee with Bigfoot. Everything you want to know about Bigfoot? No problem. He is objectively real. This is the truth. You don't want to believe in Bigfoot? No problem. I got 10 articles over here saying Bigfoot is fake. I can even recreate all the things you just saw. We can create a suit and put it on that looks like Bigfoot. We can have my friend walk in that suit and take pictures and video, and it looks just like the original. We can make Bigfoot poop. That guy who had coffee with Bigfoot, he's just really hairy. Like, you can do all this stuff to make all this information look whichever way you want it to look. It's no problem. It's easy. Which makes the information so hard to find. Makes the truth so hard to distinguish. Because there are so many, I want to call them opinions. They're not just opinions out there. There are frankly, fake truths out there. There's so much of that information on the internet. How do you know what's true and what's not anymore? We're calling that the post-truth era. That's what they're labeling this new generation where we are now. It's the post-truth era. Because even though the truth is so readily available on the internet, we just can't tell which thing is the truth. Which led me to a very interesting article which talked about the post-truth era. How do we navigate it? And their solution was so strange. It was, follow the millennials. A statement that's scary just in the way it's said. Follow the millennials. Millennials grew up in this post-truth era. They are used to having this issue of not knowing which things are true, which ones aren't, and how do you find the in-between? What we find is millennials put a priority on the messenger before they hear the message. This was extremely true to me. This is my voice here. I'm sorry. In my time with millennials, working as a youth pastor, I found this to be extremely true. Millennials put a huge emphasis on who they're hearing the message from. Not necessarily the original source. Is it Fox News or CNN? They don't really care about that. They care about the person sharing the message with them. I've shared the gospel with a lot of students, a lot of millennials, and a lot of them have not heard me. I don't know that guy. He's just some weird guy with a beard. I don't care what he has to say. A lot of other students have gotten to know me. I spent time with them, took them to lunch, hung out with them, shared things together, developed a relationship of sorts. And I've shared the gospel with them, and they've heard me. I've heard it said that nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. That is extremely true for millennials. They want to know that you care about them first. They want to know that, hey, that guy Nick with the beard, he's credible. He's at least a decent guy. He treats his family well. He seems like he knows what he's talking about to some extent, at least. When he talks about Jesus, I think I'll listen. That's how millennials navigate truth. They want to have a relationship with you first. Which leads me to the main point of how we're going to reach millennials. Discipleship. The most effective way to reach millennials is discipleship. If you look at the things that they prioritize and the way they define truth, it is primed for discipleship. They want to have a relationship with you first before they believe what you have to say. Discipleship is a relationship. They have a priority on family and kids and the truth and marriage. Those are things that are perfect for discipleship. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything as I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Probably one of my favorite verses. This is so simple. Jesus didn't say, hey, if you're not busy, make disciples. Hey, if you happen to find the right ones, make disciples. Hey, if they come to you, make disciples. No, he says a real simple word with two letters, go and make disciples. He was not ambiguous. It was very, very clear. And believe it or not, I believe the millennials to be a blessing. Odd thing to say. But a blessing, and that millennials are yearning and are desperate to be discipled. They just need us. They need the church. Maybe not the institution, but the body. They need the people. They need to be discipled. They're looking for mentors. Oddly enough, millennials
they have a strong emphasis on tradecraft, on craftsmen. Like, if you're a really good woodworker and you've been doing it for a long time, millennials will listen to you on things regarding woodworking. They believe you're probably good at it. It's better to do that than to look it up online, because there's, you know, all the truth on there is so messy, it's hard to find the truth. But if they can listen to you and see the things that you've built, then they will listen to you when you teach them how to build something out of wood. The same thing is true with our faith. If they can see your faith and say, I want a faith like that, they will listen to you when you teach them about your faith. Some of my best friends are my former disciples, which is a weird thing. You know, at first I was kind of embarrassed by that. Some of my very good friends are in their mid-20s right now. They are former students of mine. They're millennials as well. But they are my former disciples. I help them know Jesus, and I help them kind of develop in their faith, and they have a faith that looks somewhat like mine. I hope that's a good thing. And they have become my closer friends. I no longer look at them like my disciples or like my students. They are simply my friends now, and that's some of my closest friends. That makes me proud. The student I talked about earlier that I saw on a Sunday morning that was just crying because he lacked purpose, he became one of my proudest disciples. He's doing fantastic right now, getting married soon. I'm so very proud of him. I'm glad that God let me be a disciple or to him to see him go through this, which made me very, very proud. So in all of this, here's the plan, good. In all of this, I hope that it gives you some insight about who millennials are, what they're about. I hope that it makes clear the need to reach millennials. But more than anything else, I hope it makes clear the best way to reach millennials. I hope it inspires you to disciple millennials. Love millennials. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this time, God. Thank you for a chance to share. Thank you for putting me in a generation that may be an odd and tricky one. And thank you for discipleship, God. Thank you for the men who have discipled me. Thank you for the opportunity to disciple others. God, I pray, if nothing else, people here today would understand that you are the only thing that will give us purpose. Your son came to die for us, God, and that's it. That's who we are, God, is we are your children and only through Christ. Help us to share that, God, not just in word, but in action and in deed. Help us to disciple and disciple well. Help us to raise up, nurture the next generation of believers, God. They are the future of the church. Help us to make it a strong future, Father. Help us to serve you and serve you well. In your name we pray. Amen.